started. We are in Parakhaf. What did I do with my water? There it is. We are in Parakhaf, chapter 20, Pasuk Chav Dalet, sentence 24. And this year is dedicated in memory of Leah Mala Chava Bat Label, the mother of Arthur Herzig. So this piece that we're now getting into, and just to recap and make sure that everyone follows where we've been, we know that in the beginning of the chapter, David tries to convince Yehonatan that his father wants to kill him. Yehonatan isn't buying it. David says, well, prove it with my absence on Rosh Chodesh. They come up with a plan. Yehonatan comes up with a plan for how to notify David of the results. We had our whole game with the arrows. And now we are actually into it. With sentence 24, we see the test play out as expected, which is to say, David is absent, Shaul doesn't like it, but what we're going to see is the remarkable way in which Shaul expresses his anger, and more, we're going to see Yehonatan's response. And that really, to me, is the focus of what we're going to be looking at today, is really Yehonatan's tragedy. That's the way that I look at the rest of the chapter. Because here you have somebody who is obviously very closely attached to David, but is also very closely attached to his father, to Shaul. He's made that really clear. He calls him Avi, Avi every time he gets the opportunity. He stayed back in chapter 18. He didn't, chapter 19, he didn't go with David. So we need to see the impact on Yehonatan when this plays out. Yes, Susan.
Way back when we learned that Yehonatan, well, sort of didn't tell his father, I won't say he disobeyed him, didn't tell his father, and he took the swordsman, or whatever you call the other guy, and
the
he
Nair, yeah.
attacked the Plishtim,
yep.
without telling his father, and then he didn't know about the honey, and ate the honey. Like, that doesn't show closeness, that shows almost a, like, I'm going to do my own thing.
I wouldn't agree. In terms of not telling his father initially in the attack, I think the way that we saw it in the bigger picture in that story was Yehonatan's faith and impulsive faith. He just acts, much like David with Goliath. He sees an opportunity and he does it. In terms of the honey, that wasn't anything against his father. He didn't know about the decree. Now his response. His response, hang in there, his response when he found out about the decree was the one time that we saw him express himself in a way that really was strong against his father when he said, yeah, why in the world would you make such a, an oath? But along the way, we've seen his loyalty. He's ready to get killed. He doesn't even protest when his father wants to kill him for the, for eating the honey. It's the people who protest. Yehonatan is very loyal to his father, and you saw it in the previous parak. Because in the previous parak, when Yehonatan knew Shaul wants to kill David, his move was to try to calm his father down. He did not oppose him directly. He tried to talk to him. Malam had this whole layer to it where he first pretends that he's on his father's side. Even without Malam, he's trying to create peace between David and Shaul because he values both of them. That's the way I read what's going on. And what we'll see here is how things are going to play out. Because it's all well and good to want to make peace between two parties, but there may come a time where you realize that's not an option. And now what do you do? So, Pasuk Chav Dalet, sentence 24. Vayisaser David basadeh, David is hidden in the field. Vayhi hachodesh, and lo and behold, it is indeed Rosh Chodesh, as was predicted.
Vayesh,
I'm sorry.
I missed the parent.
We're still in chapter 20.
Oh, okay.
Vayeshev hamelech al halechem le'echol, or el halechem le'echol, I should say. And the king sits down to eat. I'm not discussing the kriyuktiv of el and al. Those who are in the root shear on Tuesday got an earful of that already on Tuesday. But the king, Shaul, sits down to eat. And notice, he is described as Hamelech. Obviously it is Shaul. But we are playing up the fact that we are talking about the king. And so it continues. Vayeshev Hamelech al Moshavo. The king sat at his seat. Kefam befam, as he always did, el Moshav Hakir, at the wall seat. You know, you have, back in the day when people went to restaurants, so you had the seat by the wall versus the seat that's further along the bench. So he gets the seat by the wall. Vayakam Yonasan Vayeshev Avner Mitzad Shaul Vayipaked Mekom David. Then you get this weird musical chairs thing going. Yonasan stands up. Avner sits down beside Shaul. David's seat is recognized as empty. And I'm going to read one more sentence, and then we have to come back and explain what's been happening here. Velo diber Shaul me'uma bayom hahu. Shaul didn't say anything. Ki amar mikrehu. He said it is mikre. Mikre has two different ways that it could be explained. One way that it is that you can explain it is this is happenstance. Just worked out that way. The other is that the term mikre, like the word keri, refers to a particular type of impurity associated with seminal discharge. So he says, mikrehu, he experienced such a discharge, bilti tahor hu, and therefore, whichever way I read the word mikre, he is impure, kilo tahor, he's not pure. End of passage. That is day one. So, first of all, I was really bothered when I first read this, that it says Vayeshev HaMelech in sentence 24, and then Vayeshev HaMelech in sentence 25. The king sat. Like, how many times does he have to sit? Yonasan can't sit at all, apparently. He's standing. So I think that after reading it carefully, I think the answer is that the first one is just setting the stage. It's Rosh Chodesh, and the king is eating, and then we go into the story, and the king sits down in his seat. But we emphasize where the king sits. Right? El Moshav Hakir. The seat by the wall. What does that convey to you? No reading the bottom of the pink book. I'm going to get to what the commentators have to say. What does it say to you when it says he sat by the wall?
Sounds,
yes.
It sounds like the mafia. Yes.
Sounds like Janine says. So, right. So Janine says, always have your back to the wall. We're going to come to that idea. What else? Ricky?
I didn't hear the other two that were talking at the same time, but that nobody will attack him from behind.
Right, so that's what Janine just said. Right. Leona, you were saying the same thing? No. Okay. Yes, Susan. You just muted yourself.
Like, this way he can watch everybody, see who's there, who's not there, what they're doing.
Right, again, like Janine and Ricky's idea, that it's self-protection. So that could be. The simple read of it, which
is honor?
So the simple read is what Ruth just said, and Rashi says it, Abarbanel says it. You're sitting at the head of the table. It's a seat of honor. That's a simple way that this is explained. However, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschutz, who lived a few centuries ago and was a remarkable figure in many different ways, wrote a sefer called Ahavas Yehonasan. And it's his commentary to the Haftarot. So when he presents the Haftarah of Machar Chodesh for Erev Rosh Chodesh, it's printed at the end of the Haftarot for Shmot in the Sefer, he offers two ideas. The first of which is along the lines of what Janine said, of what Ricky said, a little bit similar to what Susan was saying as well. Take a look on your sheet, please. It's source number one. Shaul haya ro'e b'nevuah sheyei hareg. Shaul knew prophetically that he was going to get killed. Now, that's news to us, but Rabbi Yonasan Eibeschutz does that sometimes. He says things that are news, that, you know, we don't know where he got them. So he says, Shaul knew that he was going to get killed. I mean, it's a fair bet when you're the king in the Middle East. And then when you find out that you've lost the role too. Okay. V'tamid haya mefached ve'omed l'negdo ki'ilu ish echad omed alav lahargo. So he was perpetually in fear that somebody is going to come up behind him to kill him. Leficha chaya moshavo etzel hakir shelo yavo adam acharav. Ulefanav yacholiros. So he doesn't want anybody sneaking up behind him, and therefore he sits with his back to the wall. The text is coming to emphasize his fear and his suspicion. So that's a that's a second explanation. And then Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz has this other idea, which I throw out here because he mentioned it, and it feels dishonest not to mention this also, even though I don't really understand it. He says, Va'od Nira Lomar, you could also say the opposite. This is benign Sha'ul. Lafisha Davida Yatamid Omed Lefanav Umnagain Be'esha Haya Ruach Ra'alav. Because David would stand in front of Shaul and play music at the time when Shaul experienced Ruach Ra'ah. V'haya Shaul misyare pen bo'eis hahi yashlich devar ma'al David v'yarogoso. Shaul is afraid that in one of his fits of Ruach Ra'ah, he might, he's done it twice already, right? He might throw something at David to try to kill him. Lekach haya moshavo el hakir. So he sits towards the wall, not just by the wall, which is the way I translate it, but really it's towards the wall. V'im yashlich yagia el hakir. And that way, if he throws anything, it'll go to the kir. It will go to the wall. So the clearly, number one, within this view, he's taking the view that Ruach Ra'ah is periodic. Right, we've seen different views as to whether Ruach Ra'ah is something that is constant or something that is sort of episodes here and episodes there. So that's number one. He's taking the view that it's episodes here and there. And that Shaul only wants to kill David during Ruach Ra'ah. The problem, what's the problem with this explanation? The factual problem with this explanation? Well, the idea is that you're facing the wall.
Having the wall behind him, stopping from...
It's not behind him. He's reading the pasuk very carefully. He's saying, if you look at the wording again in number one, look at the wording he uses.
He's saying he's facing the wall.
Yes, hayamoshavo el hakir. Shaul is facing the wall. It's the opposite of what he said in his own first explanation. You're actually facing the wall. It is a very strange idea, but the factual problem is, we already saw him sitting there, try to kill David twice. Once in chapter 18, once in chapter 19. And the reason he didn't succeed was not because the wall got in the way. It was because the first time David accidentally avoids it, doesn't even know what he's doing. And the second time, it's because David sees it coming and he ducks out of the way. The fact that if he's facing the wall at all, it's not doing anything to protect David. So I don't understand what he's floating here. Leona.
Good.
So that was where I wanted to go with this. Thank you. To me, there's another layer here, which is that the kir was specifically a kir, the word we use here for wall, was where Shaul attempted to strike David multiple times. One was in chapter 18, sentence 11. Second one was in chapter 19, sentence 10. I feel like this is meant to remind us of something. It's meant to say Shaul is sitting at the kir where he threatened David's life. And this scene should also be seen as a threat to David's life. That to me is what the text is highlighting by mentioning that he's El Moshav Hakir. You follow? Never going to read the Haftarah of Machar Chodesh again the same way. Yeah. Yes, Eti. Oh, wait a second. Eti first, then Ricky, then Susan.
If he sits against the wall behind him.
Yeah. The spear.
Yes. So he would hit the wall because it's long.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he means.
Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe. Okay. I mean, it doesn't change the fact that this seat didn't stop him before. Ricky?
Is this implying that he sat there, if I misunderstood, that he sat there deliberately so he'd be in the same situation as before? throw the spear?
No, to keep himself from throwing the spear. It's,
I think you were saying the opposite too, that he sat there, he said the same two places where he tried before.
That's what I said.
This time he's sitting there for the third time to try the third time to...
No. What Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz is saying is that Shaul puts himself there to avoid trying to kill David if David is, if there's a ruach ra'ah going on. That's Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz's statement. My statement is, separate statement, that the text words itself the same way, invoking the kir each time, to say that this scene is also a threat to David. That's where I'm going with it.
That's what I'm saying, that he actually deliberately sat there. I'm commenting on what you said.
Oh.
Sat there so that he can try again.
No, I think this was his seat. Like it said, kifam b'fam. This is where he sits. This is Shaul's spot. That's the way I would read it. So, what's this game of musical chairs? Yes, Susan.
I just, when you, it says, he, when Rav says that he gets a nevuah, I know he doesn't always have the bad nevuah, the bad, the rock. But didn't we, other than when he went to Shmuel, he lost his positive nevuah?
Yes. We don't know. I don't know what Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz's source is for this. Yeah, that's what I said when I first read it. I have no idea where that comes from. I don't know. Okay. So what exactly, again, is going on here where Yonasan is standing and Avner is sitting and, like, what? I didn't even understand how to read the words. But Yonasan stood and Avner sat next to Shaul. Does that mean that he sat in Yonasan's seat? Does it mean Yonasan was sitting and then he stood up? Very unclear. Fortunately, we have Mefarshim. And the commentators do a very nice job of laying out what's going on. There is a main view, and then Radak gives us an alternative view. But the main view is that the point here is to try to show us why David's absence is so noticeable. That's what we're trying to demonstrate here. Rashi explains what's going on. I'm going to say it outside of the text first, and then show you what Rashi says. By the way, in source number 2 on the sheet, I just gave you the verses where it references the wall. That's the, that was the idea there. But Rashi says the following. Shaul sits at the head of the table. Yehonatan is his son. Remember that the way they used to eat their meals, we have this concept at the Seder, is you reclined on sofas, right? You have these low couches and everybody reclines there. I've seen it in Yemenite Moshavim. It's very comfortable if you have no back issues. So the idea here is that it's inappropriate for a son to recline lounging in front of the father, right? You stand when your father comes into the room. You're not reclining in front of him. So much so, there's actually discussion at the Seder of whether a son, in fact, is supposed to recline when in front of his father, right? Because of this question. So the way Rashi explains it is that normally the way they did it was Yehonasan didn't sit next to his father. There was somebody who would sit between Yehonasan and his father, and that was David. David's role was to be between them, but David's not there. So what Yehonasan does is he stands up, because he can't recline, and then along comes Avner, the general. Avner sits down, and now Yehonasan is able to sit down. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Take a look, please, at source number 3. He says, Vayakom Yehonasan, amad mimekomo. Yehonasan stood from his place. Lefi she'ein derech haben liyos meisev etzel aviv. Because a son does not sit down beside his father. The yeshdarken hayalechol mesubin al amitot, because they used to lounge on the couches. Vahaya David may say Ben Yonasan Ubain Shaul. So David would be the one who would be reclining there between Yonasan and Shaul. Achshav Shalo, but David, lo he save Yehonasan at Sheyashav Avner mitzad Shaul. But without David there, so Yonasan is waiting until Avner sits down. And then Yonasan sat down next to Avner. So far, so good. Abarbanel adds the following idea, which I think you could challenge. Abarbanel adds that Yonasan did actually sit at first, lest it be obvious that he knew that David wasn't going to show up. Right? If he's standing, then everybody knows that he realized there was going to be an issue here. So he says that's why he sits, and then he stands up when he realizes David isn't there. Tell me something. Does this hold water?
No.
No, why not? You're right, but why doesn't it hold water?
It's a giveaway then. If he would do that, then you could suspect, hey.
No.
He knows David's not coming.
No.
No?
Okay. Everybody knows that Yohanan knows that David isn't coming. What is the script that they've prepared for when Shaul asked, where is David?
He says he knows.
He asked me for permission, the whole bit, right? That doesn't make any sense, right? The only way that that makes any sense is if he can say this to his father. So therefore, I don't understand what Abarbanel is saying. You're going to tell your father explicitly that you knew all along. So why were you sitting there in the first place? So that I don't buy. However, what I do buy is Malbim. Malbim has a different explanation for Vayakam, for why he sat and then stood up. Take a look at source number 4 on the sheet. Malbim says, V'haya zeme chochmas Yehonasan. This was Yehonasan's wisdom. She'ashav t'chila v'amad mimekomo. He sat down first and then he stood up. Why? Kadesha is kor ki chaser David min hakeruim, so that it would be obvious that David wasn't there. In other words, in the event that he stands, then maybe David's absence is not as noticeable. You know how you don't really notice things sometimes until someone calls your attention to it, even though it's routine. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times. I probably can't tell you how many times, probably about 4 or 5 times, someone has come into shul since the shul's reopened without a mask on and gone past like 3 or 4 people who didn't even notice until someone said, hey, you're missing your mask. Not because they flout it. At the shul's where I daven, people are very careful and they put it on even before they come into shul. But because it's just, whatever. It's not the way they lived their life until a year and a half ago. And people are used to seeing somebody's face, and therefore it doesn't really dawn on them. So, yes, it's true. David should be noticeable anyway because he sits near Shaul. Nonetheless, it's easy to miss somebody until your attention is called to it by Yonasan standing up. Yes, Leona.
I'm a little confused here. Aren't there 2 days of Rosh Chodesh here?
So there may be a second day of Rosh Chodesh, but it hasn't happened yet. We're on day one. Where? Leona? Leona? We're on day one right now. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. It's day one. And Yonatan is feeling out the situation with his father, which he said he was going to do to David. He was going to see how his father reacts.
Yep.
And so he's waiting to see if his father says, hey, where is David? And he doesn't. So Yonatan finally sits because there's no mention of David. And he's maybe a little hopeful that he won't have to do any explaining. But of course, that doesn't happen. The second day is when suddenly Shaul wakes up and says, where the heck is David?
So that's a problem. Because if Shaul doesn't notice, then Yonatan is stuck. Meaning, the whole point is, how is Shaul going to react when David isn't there? Well, that was what we said in the Psukim. If he's okay with it, great. If he's angry, then we know that he wants to kill David. If the time elapses and Shaul hasn't noticed David's absence, then they're back to square one. They have no knowledge. And that's what Malbim means. He has to make sure that Shaul notices. It's important that Shaul notices.
That's why he keeps standing.
Yes.
And so he's waiting for the spot. So I'm saying that his reason for standing is to see his father's reaction.
Yes. Yeah, no, that was Malbim's point.
Okay.
That's correct.
But then I'm saying that must have been a relief for him when he could finally sit down and thought, hey, this might turn out all right for David. After all, it seems like my father isn't even questioning it. Then boom, you know.
Right, but again, the neutral lack of questioning isn't a good sign. He needs a positive or negative indication, or he's going to have a problem. That's what I would say. Linda.
Can I just ask about this? We're talking about everybody's seat, but we're not talking about David's seat. So it says, Vayikakei, and that means that he was vacant, and
I said it was, yeah, okay, yeah. So the answer is that sometimes pei kuf dalet is to call to attention, like vashem pakad et sarah. It's a term we associate with noticing something. However, we have a related, potentially related use of the word to mean something that is lost. So after the war with Midian, they do a census of the soldiers and they say velo nifkad mimenu ish. That may be related. No one was counted as absent, theoretically. But you could read it as vacant. Yeah. So, this is all one school of thought, is that this is meant to show us why David's absence is so visible. It's because he's supposed to be between Shaul and Yehonah's son. But Radak has a different read. Radak, if you take a look at source number 5, says no. Achar sheyashav mitzad aviv. After Yehonasan sat down next to his father, kam v'hoshiv avner mitzad aviv. He then stood up and put avner in between. Ki lo ratzal yosamuch le'aviv. He didn't want to be next to his father. Why? Shem yiktzof alav al devar David lo yesamuch lo lahakoso. Self-preservation. He says, if my father doesn't like what's going on with David, I don't want to be the one sitting next to him. Thank you very much. And you know what? With reason, because look at what happens in the rest of the story, and you'll see that he's 100% right. Yonatan is a very smart man. So in Pasuk Chavav, although I don't know, I mean, he's supposed to be the one who lives on his emunah, so maybe he should have said, don't worry about it, it's going to be fine, I don't know. Suddenly he woke up to his shtadlus. You have to do something to protect yourself also. So in Pasuk Chavav, Shaul surprises everybody. Doesn't respond. Shaul is done lekav zchut, right? He judges David favorably. He says David is impure. So that's why he's not here. He plays it calm. Is that the way you read it? The way I just said it? I mean, that's a logical read, right? But commentators see a slap at David here anyway. Even though, at first, that's the way we look at it, that it is relatively benign, commentators say not so fast. As I mentioned, the word mikre could be taken in two different ways. I gave you both references in source number 6 on the sheet. Either mikre is happenstance, or alternatively, mikre is a reference to Kerry, to this emission which renders him impure. Within that second approach, Ralbag and Abarbanel read this as a slam on David. Take a look at source number 7. Ralbag says, Ki David hu lo tahor. What the Ralbag is picking up on, sorry, I should have explained where this is coming from in the sentence. Go back to the sentence before we read Ralbag. There was an extra clause in Pasuk Chavav, in sentence 26. Shaul didn't say anything, right, on that day. I'm going to come back to that. Ki amar mikrehu, because he said mikre, whichever way we explain mikre, Bilti tahorhu. He's not tahor. The sentence could have ended there. What did you add with kilo tahor? It's odd. Not beyond the pale for biblical speech, but odd. So that's what Ralbag and Abarbanel jump on. Now take a look at number 7. Ki David hu lo tahor rotzelomar shalo nishmar milishamesh mitaso. He did not stay out of bed. meaning, you know you're going to the king's feast, and you know there are concerns for purity and impurity for a variety of reasons. There's a whole discussion as to why exactly he had to be pure for this feast, but he did have to be pure. Kitivo haya noten el ribui hamishagel, because David's nature is to be involved in that sort of thing. David is somebody who can't stay away from it, and that's why kilo tahor, not he happens to not be pure. Kilo tahor, this David guy, he's not a tahor guy. It's a slap at David. Now, this is particularly striking. Hang on, Claudette. This is particularly striking because where is David living right now as far as Shaul knows?
In the palace.
No.
He ran away.
David ran away. Shaul knows David ran away. He's not with his wife, a.k.a. Michal, Shaul's daughter. Exactly. Exactly. He is accusing David of extramarital dalliances, which in a polygamous society may not be, strictly speaking, prohibited, but it is taken as demonstrating poor character. That's very clear. So he's saying, David, yeah, he's probably impure because he's not with my daughter. He's off somewhere else. You follow? That's the accusation. So we have now gone from a nice, benign, dan lekav zichut, you know, no, David's okay, to an accusation against David's character. Claudette. Okay.
Is that if the king goes to think that low of David, right?
Yeah.
I think it is in his mind, and he has to do that so that he could disqualify David.
Oh, yeah. No, I think Shaul has reached that stage where anything David does has to be wrong. I would tend to agree with that. I think that's correct. Okay. Sandra?
Was the fact that David was dallying with other women, would that be a cause for death?
No. No, it's not even illegal.
It's Shaul's daughter, but halakhically, from their point of view, he wasn't doing anything.
Correct. I mean, assuming that whoever he's with is not married to somebody else, and is not a relative, then...
No, I was thinking that he's building a case against David.
No, I don't think he's building a case. I think it's... I think it's just he needs to say bad things about David, as Claudette said. I think that that's what... I think that's what's driving this. Leona, and then Ricky.
I just have a question. So he is not thinking this. He's actually...
No, he's thinking. He's thinking it. It's in his head.
That's what I... Because it says Amar. It doesn't say Hashem.
Yeah, no, he's just, as far as I can tell, he's just thinking it. Okay. Okay. So, that's what we're seeing from Shaul. One more point, though, on this. Why doesn't Shaul react here? With or without this slap at David's character, Shaul hates David. Why doesn't he react? Why doesn't he say, hey, where is that guy? That good-for-nothing David, why isn't he here? Why doesn't he, even if he has in his head what a possible justification is, why doesn't he say anything? Claudette.
I think this is a test about Jonathan's loyalty. You want to know what Jonathan is going to react to David not being there.
Good. I'm going to take that in a little bit of a different direction, though. Claudette suggests it's a test of Jonathan. I'm not reading it as a test, in particular because the way the text puts it is that he's thinking only about whether it's likely for David or not. But I think Shaul is afraid to start a conversation with Yehonatan. Because ever since the previous chapter, when Yehonatan tried to convince him not to harm David, he knows Yehonatan favors David. So he doesn't want to say anything if, after all, nothing is up. So the there's a lot of tension going between Shaul and Yehonasan. Shaul doesn't want to say anything. And to me, the best evidence of it is the language that's chosen. Look back at the beginning of Pasuk Chavav. V'lo diber Shaul me'uma bayom hahu. The word me'uma is a great word. It often means something harmful. It doesn't just mean he didn't say a thing. It means he didn't say a negative thing. Take a look on your sheet at source number 8. I gave you some references to Psukim. You have a Tanakh there? So take a look at Bereishit chapter 22. Or you know what? Since we're still on Zoom, I will make use of being on Zoom. And I'll share it here. Yep. You got it. The Bereishit Perek Chaf Bet. So this is when Avram wanted to kill Yitzchak, and then the Malach cries out to him. Pasuk Yud Bet, sentence 12, the part that I'm highlighting. Vayomer al tishlach yadcha el hanar ve'al ta'as lo me'uma. Don't send your hand against the boy. Don't do me'uma to him. And then fast forward, I could have given you a lot of examples. I just chose some that I think really show it clearly. Yosef, in the house of the Sarat Tabachim, and the Sarat Tabachim's wife keeps going after Yosef. Vayozov kol ashalo biyad Yosef. He, this Potiphar, left all of his stuff in the hands of Yosef. Velo yada ito me'uma. And he didn't know with him anything negative. There is nothing withheld from David. And then finally, I brought one more. Bamidbar Chavbet. This is from not this coming week's parasha, but the following. Vayomer Bil'am el Balak. Bil'am says to Balak, Hine vasi elecha, I have come to you. This is the beginning of the story when Bilam has decided that he's going to go to Balak, and after the whole thing with the donkey, he says, I have arrived. Ata, now, hayachol uchal daber me'uma. But can I say anything negative? No. Hadavar sheyasim elokim befi oso adaber. I'm only going to say that which God puts in my mouth. My point is, daber me'uma, davar me'uma. Me'uma, I should say. This is always a negative, attacking kind of speech. And the point is that Shaul did not want to speak harmfully. And maybe, on that I think I'm on firm ground. But I think you could also suggest, there was a phrase that bothered me in sentence 25. Vayeshev ha-melech al-moshavo, the king sat at his seat, kifam bifam, just like he always did. And I don't know why you needed to say that. As opposed to what? Why did you say, like every time? Unless the answer is, it's trying to say, this is a normal scene. We're just a family with a general having lunch on Rosh Chodesh. Just like everybody else does. So Shaul, for his part, is trying to keep everything normal. Maybe. I don't know. That part I'm not sure about. But the idea is, Shaul is not saying nothing because he thinks wonderful things about David. He's saying nothing because he doesn't want to force Yehonasan's hand. So, with that in mind, we then arrive at what is either day 2 or day 3, depending on which of the commentators you choose. Pasuk Chav Zayin, sentence 27. Vayihi, and it was, Mimocharat HaChodesh HaSheni. We have some people with translations here. Susan, what does the pink book do to translate the opening words of sentence 27?
And it was on the morrow of the new moon, the second day, and then brackets, day of the month.
Good. So they're reading it the way that Rashi, Radak, and Abarbanel explain. It's the day after Rosh Chodesh. It is the second day of the month. Is that how everyone's translations do it? Probably. Most translations will follow one of those views. Malbim, as well as Professor Keel in the Dot Mikra, suggest that it means the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Now, there is a whole discussion linked to this, which I didn't want to bring because it doesn't help us understand the text, but I want you to be aware it exists, about how they calculated Rosh Chodesh in those days. Some of you may have been in a class I taught years ago where I talked about the calendar crisis of the year 922. Rav Sadia Gaon was not yet a Gaon at the time, but he was the one who solved it. Basically, without making this into a very long story, there was a group based in Jerusalem that claimed that the mainstream of the Jewish world had the wrong day for Rosh Hashanah, that they were off. It's a long story, and I'm not going into the whole thing right now. Rav Sadia is the one who squelches it. And as part of him squelching it, he says, you know, the way we always set the calendar historically was not with witnesses. It was with calculations. There's a reason to have witnesses also, but it was really about the math. And it was always done with math, not with witnesses. And that view, the Rambam actually mentions it also, the Rambam disagrees with what Rav Sadia Gaon said. And it becomes relevant here because we said in the beginning of this chapter, Yonasan said, not the beginning of the chapter, the beginning of this unit within the chapter, Yonasan said, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. How did he know tomorrow was going to be Rosh Chodesh? Witnesses can't have showed up yet. Witnesses have to see the new moon. The new moon is well into, you know, Rosh Chodesh. You can't have known in advance. There's a lot of discussion surrounding that and surrounding whether they had one day Rosh Chodesh or 2 days Rosh Chodesh here. I'm not going into the whole discussion because, again, it's not going to help us to understand the Perek. The point, though, is that that what is happening now is either day two of Rosh Chodesh, and therefore day two of the 3 days, or the day after Rosh Chodesh, the second day of the month. That's all I'm going to say with it. So, yeah. So good. That's one of the points made by the commentators to support the idea that it's the second day of the month is, hey, they shouldn't have had a special meal. You can answer that David routinely ate at the king's table and Yonasan did when he was in town and therefore they would have had a meal anyway, but you are correct. Various commentators do use that to support the view that this is day two of Rosh Chodesh instead of day two of the month. Okay.
According to that, Why would Yonatan have mentioned in the first place that this plan is for Rosh Chodesh? What was the significance of Rosh Chodesh if they ate together every day?
Right. So back when we first made that suggestion, some of the commentators said that that there was a special meal, and that even if David was there for some and not for others at normal meals, Rosh Chodesh he's always supposed to be there. And
right,
at this stage,
if you say it was not Rosh Chodesh, why would Yonatan have mentioned the whole plan for Rosh Chodesh?
No, because the beginning of it is Rosh Chodesh for sure. The only question is when you get to day three, or day whatever day this is it still Rosh Chodesh? But at this point David's absence is very noticeable because it's been 3 days. Yeah.
But it says in Pasuk Vayomer David al Yonatan, Inei Chodesh Machar.
Yes. Without a doubt, he knows. And without a doubt, Yonasan says Machar Chodesh. The only question is how he knows and what this is, you know, how to understand what they were doing. I really don't want to end up spending a lot of time on how they did the month because, again, it doesn't really enhance the understanding of the Perek. If you really are interested, I can send you some articles. There's articles to burn on, no, so don't burn them, on this topic. So, Pasuk Chav Ches. At this point, Shaul says, I've had enough. Vayomer Shaul el Yonasan bino. Notice, bino. Right? He's pulling rank here. I am your father. Madua lova ven Yishai gam tamol gam hayom el halachem. Why isn't Ben Yishai here? Why hasn't the son of Yishai shown up at the meal? Lachem doesn't mean literally bread. Lachem just means food in general. Vayan Yonasan. Yonasan says back to him. Vayan Sa'ul. Nish'ol nish'al David me'imadi ad beis lachem. David was called away to Beit Lechem. He had to go to Beit Lechem. Vayomer, and David said, Shalcheinina, send me away, please. Ki zemach mishpacha lanu ba'ir, because we have a family karban in the city. Vahutzi vali achi. And this is a little bit difficult to translate, but I'm going to go the way most commentators read it, which is, my older brother, Eliav, you remember him? Commanded me that I should come for the meal. Ve'ata, and now, imatzasi chen be'enecha, imaltana ve'eres achai. So if it's okay with you, please, I'd like to go see my brothers. Akein lavar shulchan ha'melech. And that's why he didn't show up. Okay, there's a lot going on here. First of all, what did Shaul call David?
Ben Yishai.
Ben Yishai. What is he doing by calling him Ben Yishai? Sorry, what, Ruth?
Minimizing him.
So that's the way that most commentators see this. I brought you a Barbanel in source number 9. I stopped translating there, just because I was running out of time for Shiurim. So I apologize, but we're going to read through it, not to worry. Haya merov sin aso, shelo kira'o bishmo. It was out of his great hatred for David that he would not call him by name. Ki im ben Yishai, he just says son of Yishai. Lema'ato ulahakel bichvodo. To reduce him and to take his honor lightly. In fact, we have a medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah that picks up on it. Take a look at source number 10. Picking up on a pasuk in Tehillim. Kilo oyev yecharfeni va'esa lo misana'ai alai higdil va'esa ser mimenu. So David here in this pasuk in Tehillim speaks of how people have risen against him with their speech, how people have mocked him. Zed doeg va'achitofel shayum acharfino so. And he says this refers to doeg and achitofel who mocked David. Lo ayuson ay vayu mecharfino si velo korino si bishmi. They did not call me by name, these people who mocked me. Ela madua lo ba ben Yishai, which isn't doeg or achitofel, this is Shaul. Why didn't ben Yishai show up? Ra'isi es ben Yishai. Hine ra'isi ben li Yishai. They keep saying son of Yishai. This is an idea that, indeed, by saying son of so-and-so, that means that he's not worthy of his own name. Similarly, we have the idea in the Mishnah, certain sages are identified as ben so-and-so without their own first name, and we assume, in multiple cases, that it's because they achieved their status when they were so young that they were really just known as their father's son, not with their own name. Ben Azai, Ben Zoma are both credited to that. We also have numerous midrashim which depict people who don't like Moshe very much calling him Ben Amram. He doesn't deserve to be called Ben Moshe. So we have Korach calling him Ben Amram. We have Malachim, angels, when they're attacking Moshe, calling him Ben Amram. It's a pretty standard thing. To which Yonasan responds, if you take a look at Yonasan's response.
Can I interrupt for a minute?
No. In Pasuk Chavchet, where we're told Yonasan says to Shaul, Nish'ol Nish'al David Me'imadi. His name is David, in case you forgot. You have Yonasan insist on mentioning his name. Yes, Sandra. Right, so in Chavdal it actually said El Halechem was the Kri, the Ktiv was with an Ayin. But the answer is that from a literal perspective, no, it's the same thing. And go back to the shiur that we had on Tuesday about Kri Uktiv.
No,
for more on that.
I was wondering whether there was extra meaning in one and not the other.
Right. I don't believe so. I don't have anything to do with it. The other approach, though, that I would bring, aside from the diminutive approach, is that he calls him Ben Yishai to contrast with Beno. Meaning, earlier in the sentence, it said, Shaul said to Yonatan, Beno, you are my son. He is Yishai's son. In other words, you're my relative. You're not his relative. He is Yishai's son. So, you know, enough of this choosing him over me thing, I feel like he's saying. You're mine, he's Yishai's. Separate. Leona.
I just think the contrast is beautiful here, because when he first started bringing David, he actually almost like adopted him like a son.
Yep.
He wouldn't let him go home anymore. So the juxtaposition here of being a son to a Ben Yishai, Yishai's son again, nothing to do with me, is so stark.
Very much so. And I will see your point and raise you one. That if you remember what discussion we had at the end of chapter 17, which we referenced last week or the week before, where he stopped calling David Na'ar and called him Elam, specifically, the Medrash said, in order to elevate David's honor. Now he's specifically going from David to Ben Yishai in order to degrade his honor. So absolutely, the contrast in the relationship, the decline in the relationship is stark. Janine. Yeah.
And one of the things that we said was just the opposite, that Yishai was a great man, and, you know, is this someone more than just some kid that's coming in? Is there some significance to his
right.
family, his background?
Right.
The opposite
and,
of saying it's derogatory.
Right. So we did see, you know, Malbim didn't recognize that he was saying Yishai as somebody of standing, but everybody else 100% did say Yishai was someone of standing, and it was the Gemara in Brachos that we saw as well. But it doesn't change the fact that he's not calling him by his name. He's not calling David by his name. And that's, you know, that's a robbing of dignity, that irrespective of the fact that his father is a great man. And in fact, you could argue he's coasting on his father's reputation, you could even say. That may be a bridge too far, I'm not sure.
Isn't it possible, though, that he realizes that something has had, that there's some significance, you know, according to one of the
Yeah.
that we learned, that he knew that it was going to be a descendant, and maybe it's a realization, wait, this guy,
I don't know,
his existence could be a threat to him, a bigger threat.
I mean, he knows David's a threat anyway. At this point, he's been, you know, ever
but
since,
God,
real.
But God has already ordained that he's going to be a threat.
Oh, we're going to see something even stronger. We won't get to it today necessarily. We're going to actually see, did I bring it on the sheet even? No, I didn't put it on the sheet. Oh, so I'll just tell you. It's going to come up next week. But Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz believes that Shaul is aware that David was anointed by Shmuel. That's that far he's gone. But in Pasuk Chaf Tet, in Yonasan's very wordy explanation of what David did, you know, David, he got called away, and it's a family karban, and my brother summoned me, and all of that. So Malbim, characteristically, takes that apart. In source 11, he says there are three different points that David made. Number one, ki zevach mishpacha. It's a family karban. You know, of course I'm not able to go to family. Beis, she'achiv agadol tzivalo sheyavo. His big brother, Eliav, told him to come. V'zeh she'amar v'hu tzivali achi. My brother is the one. Gimel, that phrase is odd Hebrew, but nonetheless. And then Gimel, Shalom halach lechov lishtos, rakamar vere esachai. He's not going because he wants the food. He's going because he wants to see his family. So there's a plea for sympathy, effectively, from Shaul. What he's really doing, what Malbim is reading into what Yonasan says here, is Yonasan is putting his finger on the scale, effectively. Yonasan wants the answer to be benign. He wants Shaul to say, oh, okay, it's nice that he went to see his family. But he knows he's not going to get there. And so he's trying to make this as sympathetic an appeal as possible. That's what he's trying to do, is say, look, and it's his family, and it's his big brother, and he hasn't seen them. And well,
he wants to put David in a good life. He's an honorable son, yeah. And he honors his family. So
yep.
That's how he elevates it.
Yep. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Take a look at Psukim Lamed and Lamed Aleph. And boy, buckle up for this one. Vayicharav Shaul b'Yehonasan. Shaul rages at Yehonasan. Vayomer lo, and he says to him, Ben na'avas hamardus. That is a very hard set of words to translate. It's a colossal mess. I gave it to you on the sheet as a list of different approaches. If you take a look at source number 12, the question revolves around the meaning of every word in there. When you say Ben can mean son of. However, it can also mean a person who is. In the same way that in Az Yashir, we say Hashem Ish Milchama. That doesn't mean God is a man who goes to war. It means God is a warrior. When we say someone is a bar mitzvah, it doesn't mean they're a son of mitzvos. It means they're a person who is obligated in mitzvos. So you could read Ben Na'avat HaMardut as a statement about his mother, and his mother is somehow associated with rebellion. He is the son of Na'avat HaMardut, and we have to explain what that means. Or you could say, no, Ben Na'avat HaMardut means you are a rebel. That's the other way to take it. So I brought you a whole bunch of different approaches here. Some of them are a little bit odd. Rashi's approach, and Malbim in Pilegesh Begiva, at the end of Shoftim, brought this medrash that Rashi is bringing as well, says, do you remember the story of Pilegesh Begiva, how at the end of it, there's almost no one left from Binyamin, you just have a few hundred soldiers, and no women, and all the tribes have sworn that they're not going to give them any women to marry, and so first the solution is, well, let's kill out this town, and then all the women will be left, and then they can go marry the men, because these people deserve death, because they didn't show up to fight Binyamin. And then there's this other group that still needs wives. And so the answer is, well, there's a festival going on in Shiloh. Go kidnap the women from the festival and you can marry them. Because this is the sort of thing that happens at the end of Shoftim. It's just bizarre. Just bizarre. But anyway, the point is, in the Medrash that Rashi quotes, and we're going to stop with this probably, and then we'll come back to this next time, because this isn't something that you can just do in a second. But the Medrash says that Shaul was there, and Shaul did not like this whole idea of grabbing the women. He thought that was inappropriate. And so what ended up happening was there was a woman there who instead picked Shaul. So she was the one who decided for herself, I'm going to marry him. Why should Shaul have been there? Because Shaul is from Binyamin, and Shaul is even from this area, of Giv'ah. So since Shaul is from Giv'ah, he actually could really have been. It depends on whether Pilegesh B'Giv'ah occurred in the beginning or the end of the Book of Shoftim. But if it occurred at the end of the Book of Shoftim, it's not crazy to think that Shaul would have been one of those people. And so his wife is the one who picked him. And that was a rebellious act. Instead of being picked, she picked him. And that's Ben Na'avat HaMardut. This is obviously very strange. This whole thing is very strange. But we're going to come back to this next week. Yes, Janine.
Why would he's talking about himself, then. But he's talking about it's Shaul's mother that behaved in that way, but he's talking about David.
No, it's Yehonasan's mother. Shaul was the one who was at the battlefield.
Yeah.
Shaul was one of the warriors of Binyamin. It's Yehonasan's mother. Yonatan. Yonatan.
Oh, I thought that
would
be okay.
Yeah.
His wife.
Yeah, so we're going to come back to this next time because it's already 2:31 and I've got something coming up that I have to go to. But yeah, no, we have to come back to this phrase next time. So just remember what I said in the beginning today. We have one shiur left on the 22nd. There's on the 24th, I should say. There is no shiur on July 1st because I will be on the road, God willing. And then we'll see what happens for July. I'm going to send out a poll, Belina, there to see what people are up to. Okay, be well.